Wisconsin is going back to work.
I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin Eye's summary of this week in the Capitol. Well, J.R., only about 10-11% of Wisconsin voters turned out for the primary, but I nominate number one surprising development, Susan Happ, winning, Democrat.
Talking to Democrats this week, it wasn't a shock that she won. The margin by which she won was pretty impressive. She crossed 50%. I believe she won all 72 counties, including Milwaukee County, which is John Richards' backyard. A couple things why I went into it. One, I've heard a lot about the electability issue, that people thought Democratic voters went in the booth on Tuesday and said, this is a woman who has got prosecutorial experience, makes her a stronger candidate. She's not a traditional Democrat, kind of like that. And that gave her a big edge over Richards. Zan's campaign really kind of floundered, and he wasn't really a threat for the nomination.
Yeah.
Two, there is a theory that if you have a three-person primary in Democratic politics in Wisconsin, there is a natural gravitation toward a female candidate. There's a certain appeal to that. More female voters and male voters in Democratic primaries probably helped her a bit, too. And then thirdly, Emily's List helped her get off the ground early on. She kind of got in the race a bit late, so Emily's List helped her with organization and kind of pushed money her way. Then don't forget, she had a big boost from AFSCME. Even though unions can't do a whole lot anymore financially, you can still get their members out to vote, and they're still a pretty big union number-wise. That probably helped her a great deal as well. Don't forget that they have so big pockets in Dana and Milwaukee counties.
What about that motorcycle ad? And the reason I ask, because Robin Voss poked his head in the press room and said, ah, didn't matter at all, but I talked to another heavyweight Republican. He said, that was a pretty effective ad. What do you think?
I get the impression talking to people that it was a good ad, that, you know, she obviously made a very big pitch to female voters in that ad, by the way, too. I protected women, children, you know, in addition to putting heroin, you know, all those kinds of things.
Yeah.
She very much made a pitch for female voters, and that probably helped her a great deal.
Well, what do you see as the top one, two, three issues between her and Brad Schimmel?
What you're going to see is both sides will pour over the other one's record and find the case they screwed up or went light on somebody. And highlight that. You've already seen Schimmel's campaign refer to Happ's thin, quote-unquote, resume compared to his.
Mm-hmm.
There's that. So, you know, it's going to be about qualifications. And then the interesting thing will be, it would have been easier for Brad Schimmel to make John Richards out to be kind of a liberal, trying to be your top cop. Harder to do with Happ coming from a Republican county with the Harley, concealed carry license. So a little more difficult to define her in that way negatively that in Republicans' minds with the public. So we'll see how that works out.
Schimmel can roll up on his own Harley, right? He's a member of HOG, Harley Owners Group.
Yeah,
in addition to playing bass in a band.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting. The thing, though, is they will be overshadowed by the governor's race quite a bit. Now, yeah. Schimmel comes out with a big financial advantage right off the bat. He had about, was it $400,000 in the bank or something like that at the end of July, whereas Happ's probably depleted her war chest coming out of the primary. Outside groups will play a big role in that race. They could probably outspend both candidates easy if they want to.
We're talking history here in that the first two women top of the ticket for statewide offices. How big a deal is that?
It's tough to know right now. I mean, I've heard all kinds of theories that one, having two on the top of the ticket will make it easier for Democrats to make the war on women argument. You have two people who would very much fit into that narrative of we're fighting against all these policies we're probably going to push that are, you know, bad for women kind of thing. I've heard theories that it's actually not bad for Walker to have Happ as the nominee because in Wisconsin we like to split our votes.
Yes.
So you might go, okay,
I'm
not sure about
Scott Walker, and then I'll vote. Excuse me, I'm interrupting.
Yeah. So I'm not sure about Burke. I'm go with Walker, but I want to have somebody as a check. So Happ is a good check. I've had Democrats. Some of that theory is completely
kind of
bunk.
Doyle was a check on Tommy.
Yeah. And then, you know, J.B. Van Hollen's a check on Jim Doyle. Of course, there's also the issue with Van Hollen and Falk's race and all that kind of stuff. But anyway. So there are all kinds of theories about what could happen, but it's not clear right now how it's going to play out.
Do you see a lot of the Mary Burke and Susan Happ appearing together, arms aloft for victory type thing? Is there some potential for synergy there?
Absolutely, but you've also kind of heard some Republicans point out that they think that Happ's actually a better candidate than Burke.
Ooh.
Now, Democrats will be like, you know, not the case, but they think she's a pretty solid candidate, so maybe she'd overshadow Mary in some ways.
Okay. Is there a chance she could overshadow because she's got momentum coming off the primary?
Maybe, but
if she's a better candidate, well, let's say this. She's a candidate more willing to take risks. You won't see Mary Burke rolling up on a Harley.
No, but Burke's also got in a pretty good spot right now. She's tied with Walker. She's got momentum, too, you could argue. I mean, she's gone from being down 5 points this spring to being dead even with him. So there's some momentum behind her as well. Plus, Burke will have a higher profile come November than Happ will. I mean, it's just the nature of the game with the ads that will be run, both positive and negative, against her. So we'll be more focused on her in the
end. Do you agree with our friend Mordecai Lee, who said the political landscape has finally changed permanently? The glass ceiling against women candidates statewide has been removed. Do you see that big of a precedent?
Well, we've had a woman elected attorney general.
Yeah, Lautenschlager.
So I've had a woman elected governor yet. So it's hard to say. Interesting note about women. If you look at the Senate Democratic Caucus, if Bewley and Ringhand, who won their primaries Tuesday,
yep,
in pretty heavy, pretty decent Democratic seats, win their elections in November, and Kathleen Beinhout comes back, at a minimum, you're going to have a caucus in the Senate for Democrats that's half women. I don't know if that's ever happened before.
I had noticed that. Mm-hmm. Hey, I want to give you props. Let's move on to the sixth CD. You said a week ago Grothman was gaining.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, were you ever right? Because pending a recall, he won. How did, what signs did you see? What tea leaves? Who whispered in your ear?
A couple things. One, having Talk Radio get behind him a little bit helped a great deal. I think both Jay Weber and Charlie Sykes really kind of went to bat for Grun. They're talking Republican primary in southeastern Wisconsin, or in, really I should say, the Milwaukee radio market. That helps a great deal in a Republican primary, have those guys on their side. Libum, again, didn't really engage Grothman in a negative way.
Right.
Libum has that kind of nice guy image, doesn't want to get dirty, and his ads, he focused on himself.
He told his campaign advisers, I'm not going negative, despite what Dewey and Glenn throw at me. And he largely didn't.
And if you look at what Strobel did, he went negative on both of them. Somebody told me this week that Strobel basically, by turning people off and irritating talk radio, made potential Strobel voters Glenn voters, because they thought that Libum wasn't conservative enough. That probably helped Glenn Grothman in the end. Now, it's 214 votes, as we sit here today. Really, it's difficult to overturn a margin, even that small, in a race with that many votes cast, because really you got to find mistakes in the canvas. That's where you might see some numbers change. But once you have the canvas done, that number rarely flips, moves a great deal, because for the most part, you're taking the ballots back through the machine and recount them again. Or you're going hand by hand. You might find some undervotes, like there's somebody who like circled the oval or put an X on a name. You have to try and discern intent then. Unless you have a hand-by-hand fight over ballots or knock them out, it's tough to really overturn a margin, even that small.
Okay, but Dewey Strobel, you heard the radio ads. I'm not a professional politician, mm-hmm, but people in the Capitol yesterday were saying they expect him to run for an open Grothman seat if Glenn's elected on November 4th. No, do you expect that?
I don't know. I talked to him yesterday, and he said he's not closing the door, but he insisted he hadn't even thought about running for Glenn's seat if Glenn wins. Interesting note, if he does, he just spent $1 million, almost $800,000, on name ID in a state senate race.
His own money?
Almost all of it, yeah. It was, in the end, I think he was up to $790,000 by the end of July of his own cash. And I asked him, like, you know, is that a good investment? And he said, unless you're a career politician, it's hard to build up a donor list. So he had a choice of either investing and building up donors or build his name ID with his own money into ads, and he chose that one. He thought it was the best move for him, short window to run that race.
Well, bring it back. Now he's got a donor list that would let him give him names for a Grothman seat.
Maybe, but if you look at Strobel's reports, he only raised in July like $12,000. He doesn't really have a long donor list from this race because he mostly self-financed. They never really put work in.
You and I know from decades of experience when somebody says they're not ruling anything out, they're ruling.
It's a
possibility. They're more often ruling that in.
Interesting note, too, all three of those assembly seats in that district are going to have new Republicans in them. I mean, they're... Yes, there's a chance a writing candidate might beat some of these guys, but not a very good one.
Right.
But you have three open assembly seats, three new Republicans that won the primary on Tuesday. Will they, any of them, jump in? Will you see somebody kind of from the private sector? It could be a Wild West. If you think about it, if you're a new assembly member, it's a free shot. You know, if Glenn holds up, a free shot, where we're talking like maybe February, March, the primary, in the general won't matter because it's a Republican seat. So it could be really interesting, you know.
Silly, naive me, I thought the Tea Party types would split and Libum would be the nominee. That's how I filled out my press
really
room.
Interesting that Grothman did very well over in Winnebago County, Fond du Lac in particular, that area of the Fox Valley. Joe really let an option slip through his hands by not focusing enough on just getting across Lake Winnebago and going over there to do stuff. I mean, he did. Sheboygan is what get it close for Joe. I mean, he wiped out Glenn, but couldn't break over there in, you know, Nina, Menasha, Fond du Lac, Oshkosh. Though if he did better there, he'd be the nominee right now.
Two other races that are still too close to call could be recounts. In the 17th Senate District, mm-hmm, Ernie Wentworth, two votes over,
yes,
Pat Baumhack? Two votes? Now that one could be potentially overturned.
Absolutely. Again, the canvas will be where you'll find more mistakes. See how it looks on early, well, if they have it in the GAB by late next week, by Friday, right, of next week. really a nightmare for Chris Larson there. You have the best opportunity to pick up a seat, and all of a sudden you've got the possibility of a recount, which drags out the window of focusing on each other and not on Howard Markline. So not so good for those guys.
But in the Democratic primary, there were only about 7,000 votes cast. Man, yeah. That were must have been, I think there were a lot of contested sheriff races on the GOP side on that one. And in the 87th, Michael Bubb and Jimmy Boy Edming, third or fourth run.
Perennial candidate against Russ Decker back in the day for that Senate seat. But yeah, now he went from being down by 3 to up by 17.
Right, they found votes for Scott Noble. Oops, not, and they moved it to the Jimmy
Boy. So Russ County, it was a mistake over there, so now he's in good shape. 17 votes, not a big margin, but again, if the canvas holds it up, you're talking about just kind of going back and recounting them. He might be the next state rep.
What's the timeline for these recounts? 6CD, bomb hack, Whitwer, and 87th Assembly?
So the municipalities have to finish. So we have, first off, today at 4 p.m., you have all the absentee ballots have to be in. That's another thing in the 6CD. There are about 1,400 ballots out right now. Mm-hmm. How many will come in? How many of those are Republican ballots? I don't know. That could be a big factor. So those will be in by 4 o'clock today. The munis have to have their canvas done by Monday to the counties. The counties finish by Friday. Then you have 3 business days after the counties. The last county in your district reports to the GAB to ask for a recount.
So we're days, a couple weeks away.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about David Clark, Milwaukee County Sheriff, big winner. Yeah, you want to find your microphone there? There yes. We go. Okay, now we're good to go. How David Clark won big. How many Republican votes crossed over to help David Clark?
Good question. Probably a good number, though. It really likely delivered the win for him. If you look in places like Oak Creek, Glendale, you saw big numbers for Brett Halsey. I guarantee you there were not a lot of voters for Brett Halsey in the Milwaukee market because nobody knew who he was. But Republicans were turning out to vote for Clark and said, well, heck, if I'm here, I might as well vote for Brett Halsey because it's Democratic primary in general.
Making mischief.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's probably why Brett got 70%. But
17.
Absolutely,
17.
Talk radio delivered that win for David Clark by goosing turnout in the suburbs and getting Republicans out to vote for him.
What has, in his victory speech, Clark credited talk radio. What have they created in David Clark?
A couple things. One, he is, I talked to some people this week, said, look, you know, we understand why he sounds defiant after Tuesday, because hey, they went after him hard with $600,000 in TV ads, and he
Bloomberg,
beat it
back. Bloomberg, $150,000.
Greater Wisconsin, $400,000 or so between TV, radio, and broadcast.
Yeah.
So they went after him that way. He beat it back without too much of a sweat. So he's, you know, emboldened, if you will. Now, a couple things. One, it makes him more likely running for mayor in 2016. They've talked him up about that. And if you're Tom Barrett, you know, you're vulnerable on safety issues, and here's a guy who would fit that mold. But I've talked to a few Democrats in Milwaukee who will say, look, there's no shot David Clark is going to beat Tom Barrett for mayor in 2016.
There's no doubt in my mind that Clark is teeing himself up to run for mayor in 2016.
Absolutely.
Do you doubt that? It'd be a safe run. He'd still be sheriff.
Republicans I talked to this week are talking him up as a possible candidate in 2016. Now, Democrats will tell you that Barrett would be more vulnerable to a well-funded candidate who had a little more credibility or was kind of a non-traditional mold. Other than Clark, who's got a lot of negatives going on. So there's that thing going on.
And don't forget, Milwaukee Alderman Bob Donovan has already announced that he's running against Barrett.
He's announced. There's another person who's exploring a run. So you're going to have a multiple candidate primary, but I think Barrett had, what, like $500,000 in the bank at the end of June? So, you know, he's preparing for a run. There is a sense among Democrats I talked to in Milwaukee that he's vulnerable, but how vulnerable and to whom is the big question.
That's okay. And one other topic off the primary elections. A week ago, reporters were going across the last ream of documents mm-hmm. in John Doe. It didn't appear to me that there were any major setbacks for the Walker campaign in those documents.
No, I mean, you know, the thing is, if there was a smoking gun, wouldn't you think the prosecutors would have already used that or had it out somewhere? Mm-hmm. If you remember, the Kelly Reinfleisch sentencing, she was one of Walker's aides who got hit in this whole thing and was sentenced. They basically dumped the notebook, as we used to call it, you know, when you're end of the week.
Yes.
Right?
Empty the notebook.
They took all the documents that they had, and they put in this whole display in this sentencing hearing that really kind of muddied up Walker a little bit. And there was a sense that these guys couldn't get Walker in that first John Doe, so not being able to charge him, they decided to kind of like lay off the hat.
Redo.
Say, look, here are
John
cards.
John Doe, too, yeah.
Yeah. So if there had been something big, wouldn't it have come out then? Wouldn't it have come out, I mean, in another case? So the fact there's nothing in there or nothing like really damaging isn't really surprising anybody because it should have been out there before.
Is there one more document dump coming
Absolutely.
Prior to November 4?
And that's the second thing. These documents that we saw last week, They were all basically PDFs, Word files on the computer. Emails are where all the damaging stuff were for Walker and the first John Doe.
Okay.
The email dump hasn't happened yet, so maybe there's something interesting in there.
Okay. Okay, finally, give us Wisk Politics stock report.
So rising, actually, you know, Susan Happ obviously was an obvious rising one. Here's a different one for you, Howard Markline. And this is why. Republican running for the 17th Senate District down in southwestern Wisconsin. A pretty good Democratic seat. He had $300,000 in the bank at end of June. This can't be playing out any better for him than what it is, because here you have Ernie Whitwer and Pat Baumhack locked in a race. It's a difference of two votes.
Bitter race.
Bitter race. You've got a schism in the caucus where Kathleen Beidhout endorsed Whitwer, and their local Dems weren't happy about, you know, Chris Larson and the Madison Dems saying what you should be doing. So now imagine this. Ernie Whitwer, the choice of the locals, wins by X number of votes in this, after this thing's all done. And then Pat Baumhack, the handpicked candidate of Chris Larson, asked for a recount.
Okay.
That would not sit well with locals, you would think. You're also drawing out the window in which you can't focus on Markline. Now, the flip side is Markline can't focus his money on Pat or Ernie. But once he can, at $300,000, he's waiting there to go after those
And you've
guys.
Also kind of led into your mixed.
Chris Larson, this guy knows Milwaukee politics very well. Another guy associated with him, won a assembly seat this week, Jonathan Brostoff. Well, he hasn't won it, but he's all but won it by winning the primary.
He's got a Pirate Party opponent in November 4. Yes, Mr. Klein.
But look at the Senate seats again. So one of the promises from Chris Larson was, I'm going to find Democrats who aren't good Madison Democrats, but good fits for the district. And you look at some spots, Penny Barnard-Shape in the 19th. Okay, check that box off. Martha Lanning in the 9th. Republican-leaning seat. She's been a fundraising powerhouse so far. But the 17th, your absolute best pickup opportunity, and you have this nightmare scenario going on right now, it's not playing out well for him. And if you look at the math of the map, yes, they can get to 17, but they're going to lose one for sure because that Racine area seat's going to Van Wongard.
That's going from Lehman to Wongard.
So you go from 15 to 14, so you got to pick up three. Now, where do you go? You have to win the 17th. You have to win the 19th. So the 9th, Republican-leaning seat, Republican year, you go to Moulton seat, people aren't really impressed with that race up there. Petrosky's pretty much off the board. Let's say, may he say something crazy that would, you know, really hurt him with the voters? Hasn't done it yet. So the map is shrinking for him and not looking so good right now. And if that 17th falls off the map, you have to win the 19th, which Republicans will tell you that they're pretty happy about where Roger Roth is right now. You have to win a Republican-leaning seat in the 9th with a Republican environment just to have a shot for a third. It's not so good for him right now.
Falling.
Dewey Strobel, I mean, it's kind of an obvious one, but here a guy spent $800,000 of own money at least, you know, at the end of July to win this seat, comes in third place, you know, 25% of the vote. You know, the ads backfired. There was an opportunity there for him to appeal as an outsider, but the way he went about it, irritated talk radio, got them against him, and never really took off. And it's what's surprising to some people I talked to was they thought his team was great. The people who did his ads have been successful elsewhere in the country. It just never really clicked for him this time. They can't figure out why.
Wow. Hey, JR, this is fun, isn't it?
Yes.
Primary week. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm JR Ross.
That's Rewind for August 15th. Thanks.